We're taking a look at physical therapy issues right now, those aches and pains or sprains or strains that you might have. Our guest, Lori Tyne Brody, senior physical therapist at the UW Sports Medicine Center, and Bill Boisenault, associate professor in physical therapy at the UW Medical School. We're really pleased to have them both with us. And are you an associate professor or a full professor, Bill?
Associate.
You are.
You can promote me anytime you want, Larry. I'll take an associate professor at this moment.
All right. He's an associate professor. And he and Lori have been with us for many year now.
As a matter forever.
Of, forever. Mm-hmm. Been forever. And I don't know how many sprains or strains we've dealt with, but it's got to be in the hundreds.
I think Bill has kept track.
I keep the logs that I take from here every day, I have in a folder back in my office.
You do?
I think that would be a good job for a graduate student, to put those into an Excel and categorize them and classify them and stuff. I think that'd be great.
It would be
very interesting.
Give them a one-credit independent study.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah.
All right.
Well, in the meantime, we have lots of people who have aches and pains that are waiting patiently for us, so let's go to Shirley and Prentice, see what's on Shirley's mind. Hi, thank you for calling.
Oh, thank you. First one, great. I am 87. I have pretty good health, but I have stenosis of the spine and scoliosis. Is there any, which causes a lot of pain, I take some painkillers, but any exercise that would help this at all?
Can I assume the stenosis is in your low back area?
Yeah, the low back is where it hurts.
Okay.
I have broken, fractured, whatever, three vertebrae that's taken care of.
Okay. All right. And stenosis literally means narrowing. There's a certain amount of space for the spinal cord and the nerves within our spine, and as those nerves move out to the sides into our arms and legs. And there's lots of different conditions and things that can compromise that space, put pressure on nerves. And most people with true stenosis end up having more leg symptoms as opposed to back pain, but it accommodates. But soon there are some leg symptoms involved. And classically, people have more problems with walking than any other activity. There are some exercises. There's different types of exercises to help control symptoms. We call them flexion exercises, where there's bending of your back forward. A real safe way to do that is lying on your back and bringing both knees up towards your chest is one example. But functionally, people need more backward bending, arching their back in the opposite direction, and they need more conditioning. The best place to do the conditioning is in a pool, where you can walk and you can do
that
traction.
That would be out for me. It's just nothing very close.
All right. There are times that people tolerate riding a bike fairly well in terms of conditioning because you can control the position of your back. Depending on how symptomatic you are, there are some clinics that have an unweighting system that allow you to walk on a treadmill, but actually you're getting traction while you're walking. And it's to help build up collateral circulation. It's helped to build up strength without compromising your back. With the hope being that you can make enough improvement and then you can just follow a home program.
Mm-hmm.
I see. I do walk about 45, 50 minutes most days.
Okay.
But I use a stick and I can't walk very fast, but
which is good. Have you seen a physical therapist for this at all, Shirley?
Yeah, some time ago, and then I don't know. I just kind of quit because it didn't seem to be getting any better. I've also got a neck problem, too, so I wear a collar.
Shirley,
it's old age. I guess I can't turn the clock back.
Well, one of the things to think about, Shirley, is how you measure your progress or how you measure success. So you said you weren't getting any better, but at the same time, you were out walking every day and you weren't getting any worse. So sometimes with aging and conditions that tend to be chronic or progressive, we measure success by the fact that you can continue to do the things you want to do. You can go out and you can walk for 45 or 50 minutes, and you're not any worse. So sometimes those exercises just help maintain your current level of function and prevent a decline. So they could be helping you in that sense. But it's not unreasonable to go back and get those exercises retooled because things change over time and maybe the exercises aren't appropriate at this point in time.
And especially if you have some neck problems, there are some exercises that I might give you if you didn't have a neck problem but would need to modify things considering you do have a neck problem or considering you do have scoliosis. But again, Lori said it would just take a couple of visits to kind of re-examine you and make sure that your program is right for you.
Good luck. Thank you very much for calling, Shirley. Appreciate your call. And Kathy in Wausau is next. Hi, Kathy.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have I've been diagnosed by my chiropractor with tennis elbow, and it's not from playing tennis. It's actually from doing underwater exercises with those dumbbells.
And yes.
Yeah, it's just he actually had me do some exercises where I put my arm on the table and raise my wrist up and down with a 1 pound can in my hand and for a little bit, and then he said basically I just need to rest it.
Okay.
And it still is hurting. I can swim okay now. We put one of those endless pools in our home, so I'm lucky that I can do something like that. But I can swim okay, but it's still when I go to pick something up, it hurts. And I'm just wondering how long this takes, if there's some other exercise I can do.
Well, it does take a long time. You hit on a couple really important issues, and one is particularly in the pool, we're careful about how much gripping you do. And if you're doing gripping, the position of your forearm, because anytime you grip and then you get resistance to the back of your hand, that really works those muscles, those tennis elbow muscles.
That's exactly what I was doing.
And similarly, anything with a wide grip, such as lifting your wrist up holding a can, the grip is too wide.
Oh, okay.
That can make it worse. You need something with a very small grip. What I usually recommend is something like a hammer. That's narrow and weighs about a pound.
Sure.
So something like that. But first you need to be able to lift your wrist up without anything, without pain. And you can use your other hand for resistance, or there's elastic tubing you can use for resistance that works nicely that you don't have to actually even grip.
So the two
components that you need to work on for tennis elbow are the lifting the wrist up with your palm down and gripping. So sometimes it's best to work those independently. So working gripping by gripping a washcloth, washing dishes, taking a newspaper and crumbling it in your hand works the grip component. And then doing the lifting the hand up with a smaller grip item. And then adding in some stretching with your elbow straight and your palm down, bringing your fingers down towards the floor. You should feel some pulling in your forearm.
It shouldn't be
painful, though.
Okay.
It should not hurt at your elbow. You should only feel pulling in your forearm.
I can feel it. Yeah, in my forearm.
Okay, right.
Uh-huh.
You feel it at the elbow. And try some ice, and maybe getting you on the right track with the exercises will get you going. But if you're still having trouble, go in and see a PT to get a little bit more fine-tuning for you, and maybe help with some of your household chores or things like that, where you do a lot of gripping.
Yep.
Great.
Good luck.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks, Kathy, for calling. And on to Lyle in Duluth, Minnesota. Hello, Lyle.
Good morning.
Morning.
How are you?
Good. What can we do for you?
Well, I was saying, I had major surgery 4 years ago, and they took out a huge tumor and took out almost 6 inches of spine bone, and they put a drain in the spinal cord and on the skull. And because of that, I've had severe 24-hour day pain, severe pain for over 4 years at the same level, and I can't find anything that lasts more than 3 hours and covers the pain more than 50%, say.
Yeah.
Which, for every waking moment, is totally distracting.
Yeah.
You can't hardly think or do anything. And if there was something or some way they could help with that kind of pain.
Lyle, what kind of treatment have you had for this pain?
They've tried a number of things, which actually only made it worse for the time that I did have the therapies, which were a number of them.
Okay.
It would be extra medications and extra pain for the following 2 days, each time after the therapies, to the point where from the beginning I can't even wear a T-shirt on my skin. It's so painful.
Okay.
Lyle, are you being seen at a pain clinic?
I've been to pain clinics and specialists, and right now all we have is a pain doctor, and so far we've tried, in their opinions, every medication there is. If there was just someone else that knew something for that type, I don't understand why it's been so severe for like 4 years now.
Well, you had a lot of things done to you, and whether it's the drain or the extent of the surgery that you needed to have. It's not unusual to have pain, but I can understand how it's more than distracting you during the day. You know, it sounds like you've done the traditional route of going through the pain clinic and seeing therapy. You know, the only other thing I could maybe suggest, and this is just if you're interested at all or not, I know a therapist up in the Duluth area who works with lots of people who have chronic pain problems. And, you know, if you're willing to leave contact information, I'd be happy to contact you later today or tomorrow and give you his phone number.
Okay.
But otherwise, it sounds like you've tried the other things that would first come to my mind.
It seems so unusual to be over 4 years at that level, finding no comfort at all. You know, I don't understand how it can be, if it's such nerve damage from the operation that's part of it, or I don't know. I don't get no answers.
Well, that's to me a fundamental issue, is that you've been to see all these medical practitioners and you haven't had that basic question answered to your satisfaction yet. Someone has not sufficiently explained it to you. So it's reasonable for you to find somebody who will sit down and explain to you in words that you can understand why you're still having so much pain.
And Lyle, why don't you stay online here? I'm going to put you on hold, and Keisha will get your phone number, and Bill will get back to you later in the day, okay?
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot. We'll put you on hold. Here I'm suddenly trying to remember what the name of the procedure where needles are...
Acupuncture.
Mm-hmm. Acupuncture. Right. Has that ever been proven useful in dealing with pain management or not?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. There are a number of remedies that might be considered alternative, but depending upon what part of the world you're from, it would be considered mainstream, that have been proven to be helpful. The problem is that they're not well studied enough in our traditional Western research methods to have a lot of, you know, sound, empirical, randomized clinical trials on some of these interventions. But there are a lot of different things to try out there, including acupuncture. And I think a good pain clinic would typically help people seek out those alternative remedies.
Yeah. All right. Well, good luck to Lyle. Let's go to Mary Kay next in Madison. Mary Kay, hello.
Good morning.
Morning.
Great to be on.
Yes. What can we do for you?
Well, I have pain in my knees.
Okay.
And I do building maintenance. In fact, I'm standing in an apartment stairway now trying to make the pain occur so I can describe it to you.
But be careful if you're on the stairs.
Yeah, exactly. If we hear a crash.
Right.
Well, it was probably 8 or 9 months ago that I started to have pain in my right knee as I went up and down stairs.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, okay, what could that possibly be? And I was starting to hop up and down the stairs like Festus. And I don't have any pain when I'm walking on a flat surface. I have some pain when I walk up an incline.
Mm-hmm.
And the pain occurs when I step onto the stair and take my weight off the other leg, and then all the weight is on the bended knee.
Right.
And then I thought, okay, great, you know, it's just some minor thing. I'll have some little surgery. And then the pain started occurring in my left knee.
Yeah.
Well, I have it in both.
This isn't the kind of problem that's remedied by a little surgery. So that's the good news. But this is the kind of problem that's relatively easily remedied by a little good therapy. And, I mean, typically, pain with going up and down stairs or up and down inclines is associated with pain around your kneecap, patellofemoral pain, because of the amount of pressure on the undersurface of that kneecap when you go up and down stairs. And as we get a little bit older, particularly in people who use their knees a lot, I think the research shows that people that do frequent bending or frequently lift more than 25 pounds are more prone to have these kinds of kneecap problems. So the kind of work you're in probably predisposes you to such kinds of problems. It's fairly easily treated with a good evaluation to look at whatever underlying mechanical factors might be causing it. Sometimes it's posture, sometimes it's your foot posture, sometimes it's muscle inflexibility, sometimes it's muscle weakness, sometimes it's habit, sometimes it's the shoes you're wearing. So it takes a good evaluation to sort out what your underlying causes are and then to treat it. But a couple trips to a physical therapist can help you sort this out. And given the line of work you're in, it'd be good to get this handled now, because it probably won't get better on its own, considering it's been 8 or 9 months.
No, it hasn't.
No.
And I know in my hobby is canoeing, so I'm whitewater canoeing. Mm-hmm. I'm doing a deep knee bend.
Sure, exactly.
I can do the deep knee bend without any pain.
Yeah, it's the moving part.
Right, yeah. I can't run anymore.
Yeah.
I'm not a runner, but just to run with the grandkids.
Right. Well, you think about the amount of knee bending you do in your canoe. Okay, you get in a stationary position. You're probably bent fairly far compared to the amount of knee bending you go through on stairs and running, which isn't as much. So that range of motion from straight to about a third of the way bent, that's the really high use range. Uh-huh. That's probably where you're having the most wear and tear.
Yeah. Good luck.
Great. Thank you. That's very encouraging.
All right, Mary Kay. Thank you very much for calling. Talking aches, pains, sprains, and strains with our two guests today, Lori Tyne Brody and Bill Boisenault. Larry Mueller here. Keisha Mabra, our on-air producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. And if you have an ache or a pain that you would like to have dealt with, give us a call. Lori Tyne Brody and Bill Boisenault, our guest, Larry Mueller here. 1-800-642-1234, the number to call, or in Madison at 263-1890. Let's go to Dave in Marshfield next. Dave, hello to you. Dave, are you there? Let's try Bob in Eau Claire. Bob, hello to you.
Hi, Larry. How you doing?
Good. Thank you for calling.
I'm calling about active demyelinization event I'm going through right now. I've had 4 MRIs. My leg started tingling and going numb and feeling different, my right leg and foot. And then I started getting these really weird hot flashes in my back as I bent my neck forward and backwards. And now my 4th MRI shows active demyelinization. I'm going to see the neurosurgeon on the 15th, but it keeps creeping up my sides and up the trunk of my body to up underneath my armpits, that numbness and tingling and stuff.
Yeah.
And I'm just wondering, I'm pretty sure it's not ALS, thank whatever, but I'm just wondering if there's anything new on the MS field that will help me get diagnosed or fixed quick.
Well, I'm not sure if there's what I call new in terms of MRI is one of the tools used to diagnose MS, along with a really good clinical exam. Seeing a neurologist is who you should be working with at this point in time. If it is MS, there's different types of MS. There's at least 4 different classification categories. And so the quicker they can classify you in one of those ways would help determine what is the best treatment program for you. But usually physical therapy will be involved at some point once the more specific diagnosis is made. The more of an urgent thing, if you're having any problems with falls, you know, big time balance issues or falls, then I would probably try to move up the PT intervention sooner as opposed to later. But if your balance is reasonable, if it's pretty good, then I would just stick with your current plan and then have them develop a plan with you.
Yeah.
I see patients in the pool with MS, in the cool pool, who do really well because the water helps slow them down a little bit so that they're not at such a risk for falls and they can do strengthening and they're supported by the water.
Yeah. Good luck, Bob. Thank you very much for calling. Mark in Kenosha, it's your turn. Hi, Mark. Mark, are you there? Well, we lost Mark. Scott in La Crosse, let's go to you. Hi, Scott.
Hello.
Hi, thank you for calling.
Thank you. I enjoy your program.
What can we do for you?
I have had a lot of pain in my heels. I am prior military service. The doctors there actually tried to put in foam, actually build or make heel supports to try to make the arches because they're pretty flat.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd get more pain. Discomfort because of that.
Okay.
And I'm just wondering how, I mean, I can't stand no more than 3 hours.
okay.
without actually moving, or with some kind of a good cushioned shoe.
Okay.
The thing is, and the bad part is, I drive semi, but I don't. I'm up and down, so you know, there's no happy medium.
Yeah.
Are you? Is the pain in your heel and right underneath your heel, or a little bit farther forward?
Right underneath the heel, ma'am.
And how is it first thing in the morning when you get out of bed?
It is not bad, actually.
Okay. All right. So this isn't classic plantar fasciitis, which is the first thing that came to mind. Underneath,
well, that's what they were saying. I'm sorry, ma'am.
They were saying it was plantar fasciitis?
That's exactly what the military said. And
yeah.
They gave me a sum of money to, because I could not handle the physical training anymore, the
okay.
running.
The PT, yeah. All right, well, the first thing would be to get a good diagnosis, because it sounds like there's not clarity there. You can have, there are a variety of sources of heel pain, the most common of which is plantar fasciitis. And
uh-huh.
that hurts not directly underneath your heel, but a little bit farther forward towards your arch. It's actually where your arch and your heel meet. Then on your underneath your heel is a big thick fat pad, and you can have kind of atrophy or wear and tear of that fat pad, and then every time you take a step, it hurts because that fat pad is no longer providing cushion. There are some small nerves that pass through the fat pad that can be irritated and be the source of pain also. So if the problem is primarily related to the fat pad of the heel, then there's various kinds of cushions that go directly underneath your heel that can be helpful. They have nothing to do with the arch of your foot. If the problem is actually plantar fasciitis, then a soft orthotic to help provide support along the length of your arch would be the better choice.
No.
That being said, you could have both things going on, which may be why it's hard to sort it all out and why you're having trouble finding the right treatment.
Mm.
Because it's up in the ankle or it's up in the knees, or the ankles and knees, and now it's starting to hurt the back.
Yeah.
The lower part of my back, too.
Yeah, well, if your feet hurt and you start changing the way you walk and move, then everything else hurts up the chain. So it sounds to me like you need to get in and see somebody and get a better diagnosis and a better treatment than you have thus far.
Now, Bill, you want to say
anything? Yeah, I would agree, too. And, Bob, as you're describing this, the things that Laurie mentioned would be the most common entities related to the heels, but if it's in both feet, if you're having other symptoms in both legs,
yes.
If no one has examined your back, they should be looking at your back as well. Because it's possible that some or all the symptoms could be coming from your back.
Okay.
There you go. Now we really threw a wrench in there, didn't
we? Yeah. One more thing.
Sorry.
But all the more reason to get in and see a good physical therapist and have somebody do a good clinical exam to sort it all out. And I said, as I said, that being said, you could have numerous things all going on at the same time.
Yeah.
Okay.
Good luck, Scott.
Thank you very much for this program.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. And let's go to Patricia next in Appleton. Hi, Patricia.
Hello. I wanted to suggest to the lady that was having back problems, Shirley, I think was her name.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to suggest that she take some yoga classes. I'm a yoga teacher here in Appleton. Mm-hmm. And what she was describing is the classic set of symptoms that can be greatly improved by a good, gentle back yoga. So I just wanted to suggest your guest to not forget yoga, because it's such a wonderful tool that we have nowadays.
Yes, good. Thank you very much. It is a good idea for lots of people. It's very appropriate for lots and lots of people working on the postural control and postural muscles and just body awareness. It can be very helpful. So thank you.
Yeah. A lot of what we do is when that person's having a lot of pain, we see them to help get them on track, get them a core set of exercises, help them with their symptoms and improve them. And then we look for things like yoga classes
or Tai Chi
right. As ways for people to continue the progress that they made. So that's yoga's perfect for that.
And just one more quick comment. I was listening to the previous gentleman, and I have to tell you, I had horrible heel pain for about 2 years. And I recently lost 25 pounds, and it is, I would say, 85% better. I'm not saying that's the cure, but it certainly helped. I just wanted to throw that in.
Yeah.
That's a really important contributing factor. I mean, you think every step you take, all your body weight's on your heel and on your foot. So losing weight can go a long way to decrease the loads.
Thanks, Patricia, very much. Bonnie in Sturgeon Bay, hello to you.
Hello. I have a question on a post-op recovery of removal of hardware in a lower leg. Mm-hmm. They said about 6 weeks. Mm-hmm. And is that kind of the average for recovery, and then your leg will be fine? I'm just kind of curious as to the time frame. And do they usually recommend any exercises during this time? Because I haven't had any mention of that yet.
Okay. Well, it's every case is individual, because mm-hmm. the first question is, why are they taking the hardware out? Were you having problems with it? Usually, if the hardware isn't causing problems, they leave it in place.
Right.
So it's not as simple and straightforward of an answer. So,
oh, I see. So, yeah, I was having problems with it. I had a stress fracture last year, and I had a stress fracture almost to the date this year. And they didn't think it was the hardware giving me the problem, but because they couldn't identify the problem specifically, they just thought, well, maybe it is time to take it out.
Okay, all right. And otherwise, you were doing fine.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Then yeah, it's just a matter of recovering from the surgery and recovering your strength again. Probably be a continuation of exercises you've done previously for strengthening around your foot, ankle, and knee. But yes, 6 weeks. Of gradually increasing weight bearing. You know, anytime you take out hardware, there's going to be a change in the loading pattern through the bone. So you want to give the bone time to accommodate, particularly if you've had problems with stress fractures. They're probably going to want to control the loading on that bone once they take the hardware out.
Okay.
So 6 weeks would be a normal time frame for that.
Okay. Thanks very much.
Thanks very much for calling. And let's go to Mark in Kenosha. Hi, Mark.
Hi. How's it going?
Good. Thank you for calling.
I'm calling with two questions. One concerns myself. I've been working in food service as a chef for many years, and a lot of that time I've been wearing a clog, which usually has a stacked heel. And apparently, for one reason or another, on another show that I called on for you guys, it appears that I have had some shortening of my Achilles tendons. My difficulty is when I wear like workout shoes and things like that, for the next 2 or 3 days, my Achilles tendons and my ankles and heels really hurt.
Yeah.
Is there anything I can do for, self-administered therapy that I can do that will adjust or rectify those problems?
So when you go from your clogs to your regular workout tennis shoes, then the
correct.
Achilles hurts. Okay. Well,
yes.
I guess the simple answer would be, when you're done wearing your clogs, you stretch your feet. You take them off, you stretch your Achilles tendon, you stretch your toes up. Do some toe raises, some heel raises, dropping your heels off the edge of a step so that every day you're in those clogs before you go down for the night, you make sure that you stretch that Achilles back to its normal resting length. And I think if you're consistent about stretching it regularly throughout the day, it'll help maintain that length. So during the day, if you take a break at all, slip your clogs off and do some stretching for your Achilles.
Yeah, Mark, okay. I can also add to that, since I'm a longtime mm-hmm. clog wearer and my heel cords are a bit tight, when I'm in my clogs, when I'm teaching or in my office, I stand up and slide my feet out of my clogs about a third of the way, so the heel's off, and I stretch my Achilles while I'm in my clogs. Mm-hmm. So
okay.
If you're doing some prep work in the kitchen and you're going to be standing in one place for even a couple minutes, slide one heel out of one clog and drop that heel to the floor and do a nice, easy stretch, and then do the other side.
Sounds good. The other question concerns my wife. She has a mild cerebral palsy, and in her youth they did some surgeries where they did a hip reversal on her. So consequently, her hips don't quite function the way everybody else's do. And she periodically will experience, it almost seems like she's having a consistent dislocation. What happens is she occasionally has to pretty much crack the joint. And for 2 or 3 days leading up to that, she's almost incapable of raising that leg muscularly. And she almost has to have me reach down and pick the leg up and put it on the stool or put it up, pick it up and help her put her shoe on and things like that. She's not in a wheelchair or anything like that, but it's just that I'm trying to figure out if there are some stretches that I can do with her that her hip will allow. She can't do like her leg out to the side.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
But, you know, forward and back she can do, but only to a certain point.
Mm-hmm. Mark, when you say reversal, did they change the angle of the bone, or did they move tendons? Do you know?
As I understand it, they changed the angle of the socket.
Okay. Okay. All right. Mm-hmm. I would think the answer is yes, that there are some stretches that could probably help her, and most likely they would need a second pair of hands if you were, you know, you're a willing participant.
Yes.
And again, I give you see a therapist for a couple of visits. They should be able, and if you can be there for that visit or those visits, they could easily instruct you in some things that hopefully would get this back under control for her.
Right.
Okay.
You should see somebody who specializes in this area, who's familiar with cerebral palsy and with the surgery that they did. So that they know the correct things to do. So this is an unusual case that probably a lot of PTs haven't seen, the right. average PT, average musculoskeletal. So you want somebody who knows something about cerebral palsy.
Okay.
All right. Good luck,
all right,
Mark.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling, Mark. Appreciate it. Dave in Marshfield, we turn to you. Hold on a second here. Where's Dave? There's Dave. Hi, Dave. Thank you for calling.
Hello. Well, I'm glad I finally got on.
Nice to have you with us.
Welcome back.
Earlier.
Yeah, we missed you earlier.
Right. I have an interesting thing going on in my left knee. I had gotten pretty sore some years ago from refereeing basketball and doing quick stops and starts. And it took a couple of seasons before I recognized that that's what it was from. So I got swelling behind the left knee, and it prevented me from doing some things. I was also a whitewater canoeist, and I wasn't able to kneel on the pedestal
mm-hmm.
for very long. I had to give that up. Well, I've done stretches and things in the succeeding years, and now the knee is pretty comfortable, but the swelling has never gone away. It does not seem to move back to like a locked position as easily or as far as my right knee.
Mm-hmm.
But it seems to be totally functional.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm wondering now is this continued swelling that's in the back, and it's swelling, I presume, only by comparing it to the right knee.
Sure.
Is that causing something going on in there that's causing a continued problem that's going to make a deterioration later on? I'm 62.
Yeah.
Well,
that's a good question. What you're probably experiencing is what's called a Baker cyst, and that's a weak spot in your capsule, and it's fairly common in the back of the knee. If it happens in the knee, it's usually in the back of the knee, I should say. And it's, you know, like a bubble in a tire where there's a weak spot and then you have the air that pushes it out. Well, in your knee joint, you have a weak spot in the capsule and the fluid inside your knee joint pushes it out. So it'd be... In the absence of a trauma to your knee, chances are the amount of fluid that you have in there is a normal amount of synovial fluid, and you don't have excessive swelling in your knee. You know, the other possibility is you have a little bit of arthritis in your knee or a little bit of a degenerative meniscal tear, and that makes your knee swell a little bit more, and that pushes that swelling out, that soft spot in the back of your knee. Given how active you are, it's a reasonable thing to have it checked out and just see if there's any underlying cause that needs to be addressed, you know, such as some arthritis or some explanation for the persistent swelling out the back of your knee. And other than that, you know, in the absence of any finding there, it's not going to cause any long-term damage to your knee.
Okay. I have another question, if you don't mind. On that same knee, just below the joint, I'm guessing it's right along the top of the bone, a little bit to the inside of the knee. I, on occasion, get a pain there while I'm walking.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't seem to be in the joint, but like I said, just below it. And I don't know if there's any attachments
mm-hmm.
going on in that area that might be causing that. Or
on the inside of your knee?
It's towards the, from the front of the knee, mm-hmm. it's probably around about 25 or 30 degrees towards the inside.
Okay. Well, there's a lot of fascia attachments there. Okay. The muscular attachments in the front of your knee are typically the big quadriceps or patellar tendon. And then more to the inside, you have some of your what are called the adductor muscles. In that area, kind of the no man's land in between there, you have a lot of fascia that comes from your kneecap and expansions of your quadriceps that come down. Okay. Depending upon how close it is to your joint line, it could be a little bit of arthritis in that joint that kind of refers to that area, or a little bit of a meniscus tear that refers to that area. So, okay, you know, given that information, it seems to make sense to have that checked out.
Yep.
Okay.
All right.
Okay. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Dave. And let's go on to Virginia in Oshkosh next. Hi, Virginia.
Good morning. It's taken me about 5 calls later than the one I wanted to address, but if I could please share my experience, and hopefully these people are listening, and I may not have the answer, but it's been good for me. My pain started about 12 years ago. I had a number of falls, abdominal surgery. Heel pain was identified as heel spurs, so I had cortisone injection, which did not help. Then it developed into plantar fasciitis, which was unbearable because I'm a teacher, and on a concrete floor, I was just miserable. I ended up going to Mayo, and they put me in one cast, walking cast first, and within 4 weeks that side was healed, and I switched to the other side, and I haven't had any more problems with the heel spur or the plantar fasciitis, because it enabled the muscle just, or whatever it was, to just rest and heal. And that was good news to me, and I don't know if anybody's ever tried that.
A night splint, or that kind of casting at night, is very common in plantar fasciitis and is very successful in plantar fasciitis. For Scott, who called earlier, we weren't clear on his diagnosis. A night splint might actually make a fat pad problem worse because of the constant pressure against it during the night. So I didn't recommend that for that reason until he sorted out what the cause was. And as Bill suggested, it could also be coming from his back, in which case a night splint wouldn't do anything either. But you're absolutely right. For people with plantar fasciitis, some kind of a splint or cast can be very useful.
I tried the splint, and it just didn't do the difference because I was on my feet so much.
Sure, yeah, right. Sure. Yep.
Especially those hard concrete surfaces, they take a toll.
Then the next caller, I'm thinking, oh, my God, these are all me. had a number of falls, and I had surgery in between them, and went to physical therapy for all of the fall injuries, and my pain was getting worse and not going away. I went to physical therapy and a heated pool and went through pain management clinics and tried all kinds of pain medicine, and finally went to a rheumatologist who said, you probably have fibromyalgia. And so then I started treatment for fibromyalgia with some very poor medicines, but now that they have released Lyrica, it has been an immediate 180%. I mean, my pain has gone down weekly, and that's been encouraging to me.
Well, that's good
fantastic.
News. Good news for you, and hopefully for others.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Thanks a lot, Thank Virginia. You. Appreciate the call and the comment. And we'll take some more calls. Our guests today, Lori Tynbrody and Bill Boisenault. Lori's a senior physical therapist at the UW Sports Medicine Center. Bill Boisenault is an associate professor in physical therapy at the UW Medical School. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're talking aches and pains today with our two guests, Lori Tynbrody and Bill Boisenault. Thanks for listening in. Give us a call if you have a question at 1-800-642-1234, in Madison at 263-1890. Let's turn to Chrissy in Dallas next. Hi, Chrissy.
Hi.
Thank you for calling. What can we do for you?
I was wondering, I had MRSA that I carried for like 2 years in my heart, and it went to my sternum, and they had to remove there's 3 joints in there, and they moved all but the last joint. So I was wondering if there's exercises or things that I can do to rebuild that area, because I have a lot less movement in that area.
Okay. And so, Chrissy, the joints that were removed, did they fuse them? I'm not sure what you mean by remove.
They actually cut out the sternum itself. It's
okay.
gone.
Okay. All right. And so, and the ribs, they're floating free?
They're floating free, and it makes it hard to move in certain ways.
Yeah, you bet. I can imagine it does.
Yeah.
Have you seen a physical therapist before?
Yes, I have. I spent almost 4 months in the hospital and in physical therapy, so.
Yeah. When was the last time you saw a therapist?
That would have been back in May.
Okay. All right. So a few months ago.
Yeah.
All right. Well, there are definitely certain types of strengthening stability exercises, but again, it would have to be very careful to make sure that they were the right exercise, that they didn't overstress that anterior part of the front part of your rib cage and chest wall. There could be some gentle stretching that could also help to a degree. But again, so the answer is yes. And the one, they may have tried all the things that I could think of offhand if I was seeing you clinically. But if it's been 5 months since you were in the hospital and seen, going back for an outpatient, even just a couple of visits for them to identify at this point in time, do you need more stretching versus strengthening? Or are you flexible enough that you can work at a high enough level with stability types of exercises?
Okay.
Yeah. Good luck.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Chrissy, for calling. Well, that's a tough one.
That is a tough problem. That's the first. I think that's the first time we've ever had that.
Yeah, I would agree. Yeah. I would agree.
Very tough. Well, good luck again, Chrissy. Let's go to New Lisbon next and talk with Margo. Margo, hello to you.
Good morning. Good morning. Good to get on here. Thank you. Say, this pain in my it goes from my left thumb, goes up to the middle of my arm. And about 5 years ago, it was just in my thumb. And about 2 years ago, it got worse, and I had to quit doing a lot of activities because it hurt so bad. I couldn't turn a doorknob, and I couldn't lift the top of the coffee pot to put the water in and on my left hand. And I thought maybe I had an arthritic condition, and so I went to an arthritic doctor, and he said that what I had there was a severe case of tendonitis, and he gave it a name that starts with a Q.
De Quervain's?
It could be what it was. I just never got a handle on what that word was. But then he sent me, he gave me braces to put on my arm to hold it straight and to wear it day and night. And then I went to a physical therapist, and they showed me what exercises to do. And now it's been 2 years, and I've been doing this. And he said that if it isn't better in 2 years, I'd have to have surgery. What I don't understand is I don't feel any change. Whenever I do an activity that like raking or sweeping or I had to give up curling because and that was terrible. But yeah, that was worse. You know, I could let go of raking and sweeping, you know, but curling.
Not curling, exactly.
Yeah.
And we understand.
They called me to come back this year, and I said, well, I can't because this thing is still there, and if I use it, it gets worse.
Okay.
And they said I'd have to have surgery, and I don't understand what the surgery would be. But I also don't understand what has to heal here.
Oh, boy, such good questions. I wish we had an hour. Have you been back to see the physical therapist after that initial visit?
No.
Okay. Well,
What they did is they gave me a piece of paper and told me what to do with it. So I've been doing this for almost 2 years now.
Okay. That pains me deeply, I have to say.
Yeah. Okay.
That's not good because the exercises and the things you needed to do at that point in time hopefully are going to change. As you improve, if you're responding appropriately to the exercise program the physical therapist gave you, after a certain number of weeks, 3-4 weeks, you need new exercises because they're no longer relevant. If, on the other hand, those exercises are not working and you're not getting better, then you need to go back and have your exercises changed. So regardless, you need to have ongoing visits with the physical therapist to progress that program as the tendon heals. What's supposed to be happening is the tendon is supposed to be healing. The physical therapist is supposed to be guiding that healing process with appropriate stretching and strengthening exercises, sometimes with using modalities such as ultrasound or electrical stimulation or other tools that we have to help with the healing process, helping to create an environment where the body can heal itself. So, to me, you have not had sufficient physical therapy, and I'm saddened and embarrassed that all this time has passed, and you haven't gotten the right treatment. So, I think you need to go back and maybe see somebody else. Or
yeah, I was thinking maybe and this person might have been, although I would be surprised, a certified hand therapist, which could be a PT or an OT, if there's a hand clinic in your area. I would go to a specialist, Margo, for the rehabilitation.
But you need
all
to get
right.
back.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, when he said that if it doesn't get better in 2 years, he'd have surgery. I can't imagine what kind of surgery there would be. I mean, when, if it's a ripped tendon from my bone or something or other.
I'm not sure what he's thinking about either. So that would be a discussion to have with the surgeon. But I would hope that you need to be insistent as a patient that you're going to come back. You need to schedule that follow-up appointment. You're going to come back and you're going to, you know, sit in somebody's waiting room until they take care of you.
Yeah, and Margo, besides the exercises that they should be giving you, there may be different kinds of splints. Some splints you use at night. Some splints you use for specific activities, like curling maybe or raking as well. So take in your wish list of things you'd like to be able to do.
Sure. Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Thanks, Margo. Jim and Phillips, it's your turn next. Hi, Jim.
Hi, Larry. Yes.
Thank you for calling. What can we do for you?
I've got a pain, and I'm going to try and describe where it is.
Okay.
I'll use the word rump.
We get it. We understand.
Rear end.
Sits down. He sits on his cheeks, and the rump part is what's above the chair on both sides.
Yeah.
Is that the right terminology? Or?
It works.
It works. Close enough.
The location.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So, Jim, it's both sides?
Yes.
All right. And how long have you had this pain?
Oh, 6 months, 9 months, a year maybe.
Okay. Was there an injury or an accident that triggered this off?
None.
Okay. All right. Any pain below the rump into your thighs, calves, or feet?
No. Just they get kind of tired after a day's fooling around outside.
All right. And any tingling or numbness?
No.
Okay. Okay. All right. Well, it could be some different things in terms of rump pain. It could be hip joint. It could be coming from your low back that's spreading into both of the buttock areas. There are muscles in the rump area, the buttock areas, that can be fatiguing and can get irritated. You know, if it was going to go away by itself, you should have been better long ago. And so if you haven't seen anybody for this pain, I'd go in and at least get examined, see if they can sort out where's the pain coming from. Is it your back? Is it hip? Is it joint? Is it muscle? And they should be able to design a good program for you, including looking at talking to you about the chairs you sit in and do you need a back support. There's different kinds of cushions or supports that can change your posture enough that can take a lot of pressure off that that buttock area. Mm-hmm. So I'd like to think there's some things that could be done to help you. And considering how long it's been going on, I'd go in and get it checked out.
Yep.
Is there a possibility it could be medication-induced by, like, Zocor?
There are some medications. The statins are a good example that can cause muscle ache and pains. I suppose it's possible. When did you start the Zocor?
A couple years ago.
All right. So it's possible that a few people that I've seen in the clinic that had pain from those meds, the pain was more widespread. It was more than just, you know, in one area of the body.
Okay.
So my guess is offhand I'd say it's unlikely, but that would be something to share with the practitioner that you see.
Yep. Good luck, Jim. Thank you very much for calling. Viola and Shano, we go to you now. Hi, Viola.
Hello.
Thanks for calling.
Hi, I have a comment about a product that works very well for pain for me. I had terrible red hands, and in the morning when I'd wake up, and then the joints would be redder yet, and they would hurt. And I come onto this natural turmeric product. It works on inflammation. It's called Curamin, and you can get it at Terry Naturally Health Food Store in Green Bay.
Curamin.
And it does not, it's entirely natural, it's made from turmeric, and it does not interfere or with any kind of a drug that you might be taking.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's interesting. I've heard about turmeric before being used as a natural healer in some cases. So that must be working for Viola, and that's wonderful.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you know, and it sounds, I know a lot of the herbals or the things like that are relatively safe. But before anybody tries taking anything like that, I would at least just make a phone call to your physician's office, because there can be some drug interactions or herbal drug interactions that may not be common, but that physician would know about. Mm-hmm. So just clearing it and making sure that it's okay that somebody adds something to their mix of things they're taking.
Mm-hmm.
I already did clear it with my physician.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful.
And my vet told me that they use that in her practice. She's a chiropractor also. And she does that with the needles and on animals. And she said that they use it as a tool for cancer in animals.
Hmm, interesting. Interesting.
Yeah.
Is it for pain?
Pain management,
that I
probably.
I don't know.
Okay. I bet it's for pain management.
Yeah.
Yeah. Probably so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, well,
okay,
I'm happy to hear that you checked it out. That's great, Viola.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Lori Tyne Brody, our guest today, and Bill Boisenault, who have come by for many a year now and have talked with us about how to deal with aches and pains and sprains and strains. Lori's a senior physical therapist at the UW Sports Medicine Center. And Bill Boisenault is associate professor in the UW Medical School's physical therapy department. Pleased to have them with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking aches, pains, sprains, and strains with our two guests, Lori Tyne Brody and Bill Boisenault. Really happy to have you listening in today. Give us a call with your questions, and you can email us as well, as we've talked about here, at talk@wpr.org. And we did have an email come in from Betty. She said she has two small tears in my left rotator cuff. One is full thickness, the other partial thickness. I was diagnosed in June on this year. The ortho doc said I should have surgery, but it wasn't needed immediately. Her questions, what are the adverse consequences of putting off surgery? I'm 57 years old. Ironically, the pain decreased after the diagnosis, but I'm concerned that I might be doing more damage because I don't have the constant pain to remind me of limitations. On average, how long do people with rotator cuff repair need to be off work? Will my arm be immobilized? If so, how long? What's the average for this? Are there any exercises I should be doing prior to surgery? Thanks for your help. And Betty is an RN and an MS. So
fantastic. What great questions. Well, the first issue is not everyone with a rotator cuff tear needs to have surgery. Most people, as we go through the older decades of our life, have rotator cuff tears. When they've gone back and done cadaver studies, they found that most people, for example, in their 80s, have rotator cuff tears and they didn't even know it. So just because you have a rotator cuff tear doesn't mean you need surgery. Particularly if your tear is degenerative, they're not going to go in and repair the tendon. That's the first thing. They will repair an acute rotator cuff tear. If you are a younger person and you fell off your bike and you tore your rotator cuff, they'll go in and repair it because the quality of the tissue is such that they can affect a good repair. They have good tendon, they have good quality bone, and they can reattach it. But most tears are degenerative wear and tear tears. And so there's not good quality tissue. They don't go in and repair it. What they do is they debride the tear that's there, and that is they take away some of the inflammation and the scar tissue. They shave some of the bone to create more room for the rotator cuff tendon. They take out the bursa, and they just kind of clean up the environment in general, which is why there's not a rush to do it. Should she be doing exercises? Absolutely. She may not need to have surgery if she has no pain and has full function of her shoulder. There may not be a need to go and do surgery. Pain and inability to function would be the indications for surgery. In terms of post-op, those are questions that should be directed to the physician who knows best what the surgery is. But in general, it depends upon the quality of the tissue and the type of surgical procedure. If they're just debriding and decompressing, you know, if she's a nurse and she's lifting patients, she's going to be off, you know, easily for 4 to 6 weeks
okay.
at a minimum.
At a minimum. All right. So there you have it. Let's go to Sue in Clinton next. Sue, thank you for waiting. Hi.
Hi.
What can we do for you?
Well, I have a question about the meniscus. Does it? Well, about a year ago, I went and because I was having problems with my knee, and I have fluid behind the kneecap. I've got arthritis, but they said that I had a jagged meniscus,
mm-hmm.
and one radiologist said that he thought it was torn. The other one said he thinks it's just jagged,
mm-hmm.
but it continually gives me problems. And the last time I had seen the doctor, which was like in about February, she was like, well, it's up to you now. We can either do surgery or you can live with the pain. Because she's not sure, you know, what's for sure going on with it. I don't do well with anesthesias, so I've elected to put off doing surgery, but it
mm-hmm.
continues to bother me to where sometimes I can't walk for a few days.
Mm-hmm.
But yet when she, like, pushes my leg up, you know, bent
mm-hmm.
and up to see if it's a meniscus tear,
mm-hmm.
I don't have the type of pain she said I should be having, but yet I live with chronic pain because I have fibromyalgia, and so I'm kind of used to pain, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Sure. Sure.
So I'm not real sure what I should be doing with
yeah.
it.
Yeah. Oh, that's a tough call. That's a really tough call, especially when you don't do well with anesthesia. I don't know where you had your MRI done, but there are certainly different qualities of MRI and different ways to do an MRI. It may be that when you had your first MRI, they were doing kind of a general MRI, try to see what was going on in your knee. It may be that they may be able to do a more specific MRI to look at just the meniscus.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a possibility in terms of a way to get more information that wouldn't require anesthesia. It sounds like it's fairly debilitating. Have you been to therapy at all? You know,
yeah,
water therapy?
I've been back and forth to therapy. I got exercises that I do for it. But
okay.
it gets to a certain point where it's just it doesn't get any better than that.
And
for the arthritis, I use the fish oil and stuff, and that helps a
okay.
lot.
Okay. Is it constantly swollen?
No.
Okay. Is it catching, locking?
Sometimes,
but that's not as bad as the pain.
Right.
And can you predict what causes the pain?
Walking.
Okay.
okay.
And so has someone looked at your shoes, things like
no.
that? Okay.
No. And I'm overweight, and I keep trying to increase my walking because the weight's not good for the knees either.
Okay. Right.
And the physical therapist told me that eventually I'm going to have a knee replacement. From looking at my MRI, she said that she
okay.
knows that in the future I'm going to need a knee replacement.
Okay.
But.
Well, the best thing you can do now is lose weight. And if walking is your form of exercise, you may try to find a pool where you can walk, where you don't have all the weight on your knee.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe the physical therapist can help you with shoe wear or a good cushion or designing a program for you where you'll be able to walk, but perhaps several shorter bouts where you wouldn't irritate your knee as much.
Mm-hmm.
Or mixing walking with a stationary bike or the pool or some other way to mix up your workout regimen so it's not so hard on your knee.
Okay.
Good luck.
Okay,
all right.
Thank you.
So those would be my suggestions.
Thanks a lot for calling. And Pat in East Troy, we'll turn to you now. Hi, Pat.
Hi. Sorry to be so repetitious about this, but I have a meniscus problem, too.
Okay.
Well, I had an X-ray, which didn't show anything, and the problem continued, and I was on crutches for about a month. And finally, they decided to do an MRI, and it showed a very small, very deeply located tear in the meniscus, and I was told to go home and hope that it would heal by itself, and if it didn't, come back for surgery. Well, it worked. I feel fine for about 25 steps, and then the toothache sensation sets in,
mm-hmm.
and I'm limping around, and
mm-hmm.
that's throwing off
sure.
everything, and I'm getting sciatica, which is an
mm-hmm.
old problem of mine.
Yeah.
how do I know when it's not doing what it's supposed to do? How long should I give it?
Well, I'd say about 25 steps. if you can only walk that far and you're getting that deep toothache pain, that's pretty classic for something deep in your joint like a meniscus problem. And now you're starting to see secondary problems because of it, the sciatic and so on. So, you know, it's a trade-off, a balance, you know, as Sue said earlier. You know, she starts to limp and she starts to have pain, and that creates more problems elsewhere. So, to me, you've gotten to that point. If it were my knee, I would have gotten to that point where it's time to do something about it. But as you limp and change the way you walk, you place actually more stress on your knee joint. It doesn't help your knee joint, and you accelerate the wear and tear process in that knee. So getting something done earlier rather than delaying it and delaying it, delaying it, where you eventually get secondary arthritis changes or degenerative changes in your joint surface would be better.
Mm-hmm. Would using the crutches, even when I don't absolutely need them, help to keep the wear and tear off of the meniscus while it's doing its own healing?
Yes, that would help, although you were on crutches for a month and it doesn't seem to have mattered. If the tear was going to heal, 4 to 6 weeks, you know, it should be healed.
That's what I needed to know.
Yeah, there are certain portions of the meniscus, and the radiologist or your physician should be able to tell you this. There are certain portions of the meniscus that have no blood supply and really have absolutely no chance whatsoever of healing. And those would be the deepest portions of the meniscus closest to the center of your knee. And then as you move outward in the outer third in the superficial area, portions of your meniscus do have a blood supply. It also depends upon the direction or orientation of the tear. There are some tears that whenever you step down on them, the tear splits apart that have no chance of healing if you're going to put any weight on it at all. So again, the radiologist or the orthopedic surgeon should be able to give you a better prognosis depending upon the size and location of that tear.
Okay.
I appreciate your explanation. Thank you very much.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Thanks for calling, Pat. Appreciate it. Paul in Cashton, turn to you now. Hi, Paul.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good. Thanks for calling.
Quick question here. I got just want an opinion from your experts there. I had what they called a herniated disc between my, the C6 and C7. Cervical vertebrae.
Okay.
And I saw a neurosurgeon, and at the time, the pain was quite severe. Before they did the MRI and that, I had extreme pain in my right arm and down actually more localized in my forearm area and numbness in my the first two digits of my fingers. And they explained to me that that's probably a classic symptom of that. Anyway, I saw the neurosurgeon, but by the time I got in to see him, some of the symptoms had started to alleviate a little bit. And I had gone to my local doctor, had me go to a physical therapist, which they did various things as far as stretches, massage in certain areas across my shoulders, and then they had me doing some strengthening exercises and things like that. But the biggest thing that I've noticed is I've lost a lot of strength in my tricep area. And I've tried to do things to try to strengthen it just in my everyday job and stuff, but it just doesn't seem to be there. And to me, it seems like I've lost some muscle mass in my tricep area and stuff. Is that typical, or is there anything a person should be doing?
Yeah, well, Paul, what you described is kind of as a classic presentation of herniated disc, and C6-7 is one of the most common levels for that to occur in the neck. And so describing the pain down into the arm, the numbness in those fingers, and loss of strength in triceps is a pretty classic combination. How long ago was this? How many weeks or months ago did this start?
It actually happened. It was funny. There wasn't anything that I could think of that caused it initially. I woke up one morning with just my arm just aching terribly. And then I went and saw the doctor, and we kind of did things, and it progressed from there. Anyway, when the neurosurgeon, that happened back in June. And when I seen the neurosurgeon, he said, we won't need to do anything right now. Things are seem to be getting better. He says, if you go through and you can't stand it anymore, couldn't exactly know exactly what he's talking about, the pain or whatever. But like I said, the pain, the numbness and the pain have gone away.
Okay.
But I just still feel that I don't have that muscle.
You bet.
In the triceps.
You bet. Well, not everybody with a herniated disc needs surgery, and unless you're progressively losing strength or sensation, or you're starting to lose things like bowel and bladder control, it's good to give it at least 6 to 8 weeks and see if the body can heal itself. And typically the sequence of how things go away, usually pain goes away first, then sensation comes back, and then strength. Now, having said that, you may not get full return of strength in that triceps area. There's times you don't always get full return. Now, with June, it is probably safe enough to be doing some tricep exercises to try to strengthen that muscle. But if you do too much too soon trying to strengthen, see, it's not the muscle. It's not the problem's not with the triceps. It's with the nerve connection to the triceps.
Mm. Okay.
And you can over-exercise early on, and actually the muscle will get weaker and weaker instead of gaining strength. But the fact it's been this many months, I would think this is a reasonable time for you to start working on strengthening. There's different ways to strengthen the triceps and different ways to strengthen it while protecting your neck. If you haven't, if the therapist hasn't given you specific exercises for your triceps, one visit would probably go in to have them examine you and just see. They should be able to tell you how hard you should push the triceps and what would be a safe way to do it.
Okay.
All right. Good luck.
But there's a chance up to even a year for you to get some return back, just with the body continuing to heal.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Paul. Joe in Eau Claire, your turn. Hi, Joe.
Hi. Well, it's really interesting. There's a few people that touched on topics that are very closely related to what I'm calling about. I'll try to be brief, but I'll keep on going because some things that you're recommending could be very dangerous in my situation. And at the end of August, my left hand, my thumb began to go numb, and then it began to hurt more in my wrist. I went to my normal family practitioner, talked to him. He didn't think much of it. Told me, well, take some pain pills. And then I exercised more. It went on another 4 weeks, and then he sent me to a physical therapist, a large physical therapist, north Milwaukee area. I'm in the car phone right now. And I went there for 6 weeks, all kinds of manipulation, stretching, et cetera. Nothing happened. He said, gee, you're going to have to go to a pain specialist and maybe get an injection in your neck. Well, I went there. He wouldn't do any, and I also went to acupuncture. Neither one do anything unless I had a stress test or an MRA. And the pain doctor was going to give me a shot, and because I ate that morning, he wouldn't do it, so he set up an MRI for me. I took an MRI. I came back in for an appointment for the injection. He looked at my MIR results, and he wouldn't give me an injection. He wanted me to go see a specialist. I went to Milwaukee, saw a specialist. He said that I needed an operation on my C7 in my neck, and the worst thing I ever could have to go to a physical therapist because the bone...
Oh,
gee.
We lost Joe.
Oh, my goodness. We just got to the end of the story.
Yeah, just getting toward the punchline, I think.
Yeah.
Oh, no, he's completely gone. I'm sorry, Joe, but you must have gotten out of your cell phone range.
Yeah. I think what I kind of heard at the end was that the specialist told him the worst thing to do or worst place to go. And so I don't know if he was going to say physical therapy for a herniated disc, if that's what he had. But that's just conjecture. So I should probably just be quiet.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. One of the things physical therapists are trying to do is to screen for underlying metabolic disease, to rule out, other kinds of pathology. et cetera. So,
yeah. And PTs do a really detailed neurologic screening exam. So if someone does have pressure on a nerve that it's presenting in a progressive fashion, the PT will recognize that and will help make a referral to either an orthopedist or a neurologist or neurosurgeon in a timely fashion.
All right. Well, let's turn to Jim and Madison and see what's on Jim's mind. Jim, hi. Thank you for calling.
Larry, one simple question, or maybe two simple questions. Number one is, frequently I am awakened in the morning with spasms, I'm going to call them, in my lower legs. Can be in one, can be in both, can be very, very painful. And the only solution that I've found is to roll out of bed, even if you have to roll on the floor, get up, and walk around, and about 5 minutes after you start walking, the pain gets less and less and finally goes away. Any diagnosis and treatment of such things in the lower legs in the morning, and it's usually after a good night's sleep in the morning.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, it's not a rare complaint, and it can be extremely painful.
It's
spasms
be.
Or the cramps, and the good news is that you can get rid of them fairly quickly, and that walking. I'm assuming walking is not a problem for you the rest of the day. Then is
nope.
that correct? Okay. All right.
That's right.
So that it most likely isn't arterial insufficiency, a certain type of vascular condition, but there's lots of other medical conditions that can cause this cramping and spasm in the leg. Sometimes it's called restless legs.
I don't think it's restless.
Okay. All right. Have you seen your physician for this, Jim?
Yeah, and she doesn't have much to offer.
Okay.
Just a couple exercises, and one of them is roll over in your back while you're still in bed. Roll over in your back and pull your toes up towards your chest as far as you can. Keep your legs straight, but rotate your feet up, and that seems to help someplace.
All right.
Sometimes.
All right. Well, as long as they've done a good physical exam, and sometimes they'll do blood work for you because it can be related to things like electrolyte imbalance. There can be certain kidney problems that can cause this type of cramping or spasm in the legs at night like that. There's been times where I've given some people some stretching exercises to do before they go to bed at night. Because once you wake up and they're there, you already know how to get rid of them. You get up and you walk. But sometimes some stretching before people go to sleep at night can help some. And so stretching your calves, stretching your hamstrings, if that's going to help, you would know within a couple of weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, I'd go back to your physician again if this is happening on any kind of a regular basis.
Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Cheryl near Dickeyville says yoga was recommended on the show a few minutes ago, and I'm past a year on my hip replacement and wondering if I can do yoga. Not sure about the hip restrictions applying to some of the positions. For general information, I'm relatively young. Was told my hip was a congenital problem that would have needed replacement 20 years ago if I'd ever been overweight. I do have some arthritis in my ankle and back.
Yeah, certainly a good yoga instructor can modify any positions for precautions due to either a hip replacement or arthritis or spinal surgeries or whatever. It's just important. Any good yoga studio or exercise studio should get a full medical history from their clients, and then the instructor can incorporate those precautions or contraindications into the treatment. The exercise program.
Yeah, and heading into that, she could always call the surgeon's office and say, am I limited or restricted in any way with certain hip movements or positions? Yes or no? And if yes, what are those? And then she could take those into the yoga instructor who can modify all kinds of things for her.
Well, I'll tell you what, the time flew again. And you guys you'll be back on December 10th or somewhere around there?
Or about December 10th.
Yes.
Okay.
All right. Thank you both very much for being with us. Lori Tyne Brody, senior physical therapist at the UW Sports Medicine Center, one of our guests. The other, Bill Boisenault, associate professor in physical therapy at the University of Wisconsin Medical School. I'm sorry we didn't get to everybody, and I see Joe from Eau Claire got back on, but we weren't able to get to him and for him to finish his story. I'm sorry about that. Well, coming up tomorrow at 11 o'clock, we'll be talking about your pet's health. And to do that, we have Dr. Sandy Newberry of Madison. Sandy's a National Shelter Medicine Extension veterinarian. It works out of the UC Davis School of Veterinary Medicine, and she will be with us. She's been on a few times, and it's always nice to have her along. She'll be back to talk about your pet's health, so we'll look forward to that. In the meantime, thanks for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.